Hey there, everybody. Doing things a little bit differently this time, giving you your, hey, I'm the DM chat before we start the show, because this show is a single boss fight, and I really wanted to just keep it all one single file, one single momentous experience for you all to oversell it. I want to say right at the top, big thanks to Justin Riley, who has done an amazing, amazing, amazing job with all the audio, sound effects, soundscapes, producing and making our mics sound way better than they have any business sounding. He uses Tabletop Audio and BattleBards, which are both awesome services if you are doing a recorded game like this, or even if you're just doing it with friends and you want to give some atmosphere to it. Follow us on Twitter at D&D Adventure. And leave us a comment, talk to us. Please, please, please review us on iTunes. It's really the best thing you can do for the show. We've had some really great numbers over the past couple weeks, and it's all really because of you guys doing your own thing and promoting the show in that way. Keep telling people who love D&D about our show. It's the best we can possibly do. We actually just recorded our finale of the campaign, and that I'm very excited for you guys to hear. Brian will be taking over. You'll probably start hearing that in the weeks to come. We're doing another out-of-character episode, so if you have questions that you want the group to answer, please send them in at D&D Adventure or adventure at talkingcomicbooks.com, and ask us questions about the campaign and stuff like that, and we'll talk about them. Justin is supposed to come down and be part of the show, so I'm super pumped for all of that. It's going to be really, really cool. But I think that's enough of me droning on. Let's get to the finale of the Trials of Blackthorn.
Previously on Adventure.
The last magical item we need is in Blackthorn Castle in Blackthorn Village.
All of this leads up to a giant throne, and sitting atop it is another ogre.
Thanks. Call me your majesty, I like that one the best. What am I supposed to do with this bunny? What's an ogre supposed to do with a bunny, huh?
I thought you might be hungry.
So I'm gonna come right to the side.
Okay.
Wait for him to sort of begin to digest or put this into his mouth. Enlarge myself, put a shield on that thing, and
run away. The moment the bunny perishes, the ring explodes and flings the ogre back and knocks over his giant throne. He drives those daggers into his eyes. He lets out and dies. So all three of you walk through into the rubbled area of the city.
Julian, what do you see?
There's a snake the size of a small town.
And young Henrique steps next to you.
I am here for you, my friend. You saved me once, and now I'll help you.
Good to see you, buddy. Let's do this.
He's blind. We can just...
By the way, I just cast a spell that not only blinded this horrible creature, but it will now give us all advantage on attacks.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have advantage over this beast.
It's a little weird that you're talking about game mechanics to us, but all right.
Advantage is a word that you can use just in regular life.
Henry attacks.
So we got to roll for initiative.
Fuck. All right. So 15.
16.
18.
Okay. 16 and a 5. Okay. First up in the order is Julian. And I will say this. Julian knows where it is. None of the other you guys can see where the thing is. So before you attack, you have to be able to ask, you have to ask Julian where to attack.
Okay.
If you don't ask him that, you'll have disadvantage on your attack rolls. All right, Julian, you're free to do whatever.
Sure.
Okay. All right, Julian, you're first up.
Lightning bolt.
Okay.
You need to make a dexterity saving throw. Now, considering he's blind, how dexterous can he's a snake be?
He's going to have disadvantage on a dexterity saving throw. Okay. He rolled a 2 and a 1, so I think either way...
We'll take the 1!
He would have been fine. So,
8d6.
8d6. All right, roll it up. Roll 8d6s. And you guys are going to have to count for me because I'm not going to keep track of this.
6.
6.
4. 4. 10.
5.
15.
19.
3. 22. 5. 27. Plus 1.
4.
1 more.
6.
37.
In a row? So deal a massive amount of lightning damage through this thing, blinded giant serpent on its back, and you take a giant amount of damage out with 37. You know, not bloodied or anything, but it's definitely a nice.
Is it kind of on fire that my friends can see him?
Well, they could see like the outline of where
the shimmering light
of where the lightning was going. So you, I mean, right now it's like almost directly in front of you on the ground. So, yeah. I mean, the other thing you can do, Julian, is pass the glass armor if you wanted to, but that's up to you.
Okay.
All right. Is it me?
But I will say that to pass the glass, it's going to take an action. So you're going
to... we'd have to lose a...
Yeah, so you can't do it.
Them asking wouldn't take an action?
No, them asking would take an action, okay. But you handing it off would take an action.
So who's next?
Next up in the order is Thrace.
All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is, because Julian is our eyes to this thing, is I'm going to use my mage armor on him to give him a little extra buff.
Nice.
He's right in front of Thrace.
Okay.
Right in front of you. Yeah.
All I have to do is I'm just going to reach out and touch Julian. Mm-hmm. He is going to get his target base armor class becomes 13 plus the dex modifier. There you go.
So what is it?
13 plus his dex modifier.
Okay. His armor
mage
class
armor.
Becomes that. Yep. Okay.
That was 12 to start with.
What's your dex modifier?
Oh, it is 1.
Okay, so 14.
So you get 14, so a little buff.
A little buff for you. So your armor class is now 14.
Okay. And now I am going to... I'm going to use my first time. I'm going to try this out. My chromatic orb.
Okay, what does this do?
First level evocation, range of 90 feet, 3d8 damage of the type you choose. So because I know that lightning cut right through him, I'm going to use some lightning damage on him.
Okay. So is there...
I'm going to describe...
Yeah, I don't know if I have to make like a save or anything.
So you hurl a 4-inch diameter sphere of energy at a creature you can see within range. You can choose acid, cold, fire, lightning, poison, or thunder for the type of orb you create. Then make a ranged spell attack against the target. If the attack hits, they take 3d8 damage of the type you choose.
Okay, all right. That's so you'd make a ranged spell attack.
And I have like a... My ranged spell attack is...
Yeah.
Plus 4.
Plus 4, yeah. So it's 8 plus... eight, okay, so...
3d8 plus 4,
roll,
right?
No, you roll a d20, and then add... It's like making your attack with your Warhammer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, roll it, and then add 4.
19.
19 is a hit, for sure, yes.
Okay, so now
3d8. Roll the 3d8s up.
This one.
4.
5.
9. 17.
17, 20.
Oh, 3d8s.
It was 3d8s.
Oh, 17. Okay, yeah. 17. Another, what kind of damage is this?
Lightning damage.
It's an aura of lightning damage.
Yeah.
Okay, so this aura of lightning flies out from you, Thrace, and hits this downed serpent. And again, the electricity just cuts right through him. It does 17 points of damage. Again, this is a big, big animal. So it does a good amount of damage, but not, obviously, not bloodied or anything like that quite yet. Okay. All right, cool. All right, so next in the order is Henrique.
Give him hell, Henrique.
Henrique.
I'm really hoping you can do something this thing before I got you.
As Henry tries to stab his giant eyeballs with two tiny little daggers. Yep. The Henley.
Where is the great beast? Julian.
He's right in front of you. If you could reach out your right hand, you would touch him.
All right. So Henrik takes two javelins from behind his back, and he spins them in his hands, and then he tosses them at the great beast. He gets advantage on all attack rolls. 14 plus 3 is 17. That is a hit. And he's going to do 4d8 damage. Yes. 1, 8... 10.
11. 13.
12. No, you were counting it wrong.
I was?
Yes.
See, Thrace not good at math.
The two javelins come flying out and they stick to the point where they hit the snake and they stay there. So basically it looks like for you guys, there's two javelins sticking out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This helps.
Awesome.
And
now
how,
we can
and
see
how
it.
How high up is that?
I mean, he is laying, the snake is basically laying back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's even though it's 100 feet tall, think about that like in the proportion to a snake.
Sure.
Like the difference between how wide it is
so
and how long
it
is.
It's going to be 10 feet in the air.
Yeah,
or
something like
that.
Yes,
like
exactly,
that.
Okay. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Henley, you're up.
All right. Hey, Julian, I was going to ask you where this thing is, but I'm pretty sure that javelin is sticking out of one of its eyes because it It keeps saying, I'm blind, I'm blind, I'm blind, out my eye, now I'm really blind.
He didn't say that at all, actually. So.
In my head, he did. So I'm going to take my bladed quarterstaff and go and try and scoop out the left eye.
Okay. You got to get for a pretty good direction. For
yeah, that. There's a javelin sticking out of it.
I said the javelin's sticking out somewhere on the body. I didn't say it was sticking out of his eyes.
Oh, I thought you did.
No, I didn't just, say that. That's just in your mind where you think all attacks happen on the eyes.
Oh, he's like some kind of freaking cat or something. What is his obsession with scratching out the eyeballs?
All right. Hold on.
Somewhere between those two javelins
I have
is
an
a
idea.
Spot.
Do we have any poison?
Do you?
I don't think we have poison, but I mean, we might have poison attacks.
No, I was thinking way too outside the lines here.
Hendley, just hit it with something.
All right, I'm just going to try and stab it with my bladed quarterstaff right near that javelin, wherever that is. But it's writhing, right? I mean, it's in it.
Yeah.
So, 15.
Wait, 15 plus what?
No, it was my. I'm rolling for attack.
Yeah, yeah. No, but you have to hit first.
Well, yeah, I have advantage.
Yeah. So, but I'm okay. Roll again.
It was 15 and then 13, so 19 or 17.
What do you think? 19 is good.
19. Yeah.
Yeah. I was gonna say you didn't have to roll again. Unless it could have been a critical, I guess. So you could, I guess, rolling again makes sense. But
sure.
Okay.
So
that hits.
I'm going over there with that. 1d6 plus my dagger. It's a 4. D4 plus 2. So 1, so 3, so 7. 7 damage.
7 damage. You do 7 damage to the creature. You like jumped on its chest, right?
Basically. I don't know. I just jumped where?
Well, you jumped onto it.
Yes.
Where the javelins were.
Yes.
Okay, so you feel the creature below your feet. You do 9 points of damage.
7.
Seven.
But what it looks like is Hendley thriving around in the air on top of nothing.
Right. Yeah. 7 points of damage. Okay. Anything else you want to do with your turn?
Nope.
Okay.
Uh-oh, hold on to your butts, people.
So, it's Jarmondir's turn.
Yes, I do.
Sorry.
Okay.
You come in. Hang on, giant monster. Wait 1 minute. I got something else for you.
So, Jarmondir, his first move is to get off his back and up. Onto his tail, and he whips wildly, Henley, with you on him. So either you're gonna fall off, or you're gonna try to grab onto something.
I'm just gonna hold on to the javelin.
Okay, you should hold on to the javelin. So do an acrobatics check.
17.
So with a 17 plus whatever you.
No, it's 11 total, plus 6.
Okay. You also get an advantage, so you can roll twice. But I mean, 17 is gonna do it unless you get a 20.
I got an 18 this time.
Okay, so there you go.
Plus 6.
So you're
24.
You're able to hold on to both javelins.
Okay.
And the snake basically retreats away from where it is. Like almost like a, you know, like a cobra, so it's like on the back of its tail.
Stop.
Julie, Henley, you can see you're probably now just probably about 10 feet above the ground, so you're pretty close to the ground still.
Okay.
You can realize that the javelins aren't that far up the snake's body.
Okay.
At this point. And then the snake goes back to the clock tower and wraps itself back up around the clock tower. Henley, you're just like, hey, now you're hanging off. And you're probably like 50 feet off the ground.
Okay.
At this point. And then Jarmondir is going to attack. He does not realize that you're on him right now, though.
Okay.
Because how could he? He's going to attack. Okay. He's going to try to swallow Thrace.
Oh, I'm definitely feeling a track.
He's going to extend
on.
Himself out across the.
Right.
You basically, only part of him that's still on the clock tower is going to be the part you're on.
Okay.
You, I mean, you can't really tell. It's all you can feel is like the movement. Julian can see this when it happens, but it happens in, you know, moments. He extends his body out and goes to bite you. Attack. 16, but he has disadvantage. 20. So 16 plus 11 to hit. So 27. So that's a hit. He does 40 damage.
What?
He would
How
do
did he even find her?
He would do 3d6. We can see now.
Oh.
He was blinded for that turn.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. He does 3d6. He would do 3d6 fire damage to you, but you're into a fire.
I am fireproof.
So you are now in his basically in his mouth, in his belly, and you are, you know, he returns to the clock tower once again.
So now Henley's hanging off of his back on the clock tower. I'm in his mouth on the clock tower.
And we're back around to Julian.
He's how high up on this tower?
I said 150 feet. His head is about 150 feet above the ground. But he's only, 60 feet in front of you, basically. But.
Mm-hmm. What can we do that doesn't kill my friends? This is a problem.
Something.
I'll tell you that if you attack him, you're not going to hurt her.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm not going to do much for Henley.
Well, as long as you don't hit the. That's a 100. It's a 100-foot long snake.
Yeah.
Yes. You hit it in its head. It's not.
Do you
gonna...
have anything that can, rather than attacking it, do you have anything that can bind it in some way? Sometimes all-out attacks are not the best idea. Sometimes, can you do something that's going to stop it being able to attack us, or it's going to weaken it in some way?
I can weaken his attacks, but that's a little late for that.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. No? It's going to be a long battle.
Okay. The Ray of Enfeeblement.
Okay.
It's a black beam of enervating energy springs toward a creature within range.
Okay.
And that makes a rated spell against the hit. The target deals only half damage.
Okay.
Yes, do it.
That use strength until the spell ends.
Okay.
So your fire attacks, no, but your
right,
beastly
the
stuff.
Physical attack, right. The biting attacks.
And what's it called?
Ray of Enfeeblement. Does it say what? Is there any save or anything?
I don't see any on the card I wrote.
Okay. Well, Jackie's looking it up.
At the end of each of the target's turns, it can make a constitution saving throw against the spell.
Okay, but not the first time. Okay. No. So, all right. So, done. Half damage is black beam straight out and gives half
awesome.
Damage to Jormundir.
Woo!
And then next in the order is Thrace inside right. the thing's belly.
All right, good. Out of the game.
Out
of game. Credit to Brian for this one. But yeah. Whilst inside the giant snake's mouth, I'm going to take out Ralph.
Okay.
I'm going to look him in the face and I'm going to say, sorry about this little dude. And I'm going to slit its throat with one of my talons and I'm going to throw it down this thing's throat.
Okay. All right. Okay. I like that. Slit the thing's throat, throw it down the snake's belly. It explodes. And what did I say last time? Was it 4d10s I had you roll, I think?
Yeah, right?
I think it was 4d10s, I think.
That sounds
for
right.
Yeah, 4d10s. Yeah, because that was just like zero. Remember?
And it
was
right.
Like,
yeah.
All right, 4d10s. 7. 2. 9.
9. 18.
25. 25. Wow.
Boop. So that's one of my actions, right?
Yes. Yes. But
even inside, you can, because you get two.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So just so you know, I'll tell you what happens here. The Jormundir seizes for a moment and then vomits you out of his mouth.
I was going to say, if you got to come out, it's a better end to come out.
Yeah.
Right?
You do fall 100 feet, so I need you to make a dexterity save so you don't take damage.
What? D20?
D20.
Ah, it's an ant on my head. I just threw it in your leg. It's gone.
Very scary,
well,
I know.
Weird, right? Yeah, we're fighting a giant snake. Yeah. man! 12
plus your dex modifier.
3. So
15. So with the 15, you're able to save. You're only going to take 1d4 damage. Take 4 points of damage.
Okay.
So
that was one of my turns, right?
Yeah, yes.
So I'm vomited out now.
Yes, you're on the ground, vomited out.
Now, this thing is up the clock tower?
Yes.
Okay. So Julian, you can tell me that. So it's still, but I can reach it with my boots. If I jump at it?
Yes, you can reach at least the body.
He's about his head's 50 feet from where you see poor
all
Henley
right.
dangling off the side of
so
the clock tower.
So what I'm going to do is I'm also going to use my action surge.
Okay.
So I have two more actions left.
Okay.
I am going to jump with my boots at this thing and my dragon glaive.
Okay.
And I'm going to stick my dragon glaive in so I too am dangling from the snake's body.
Hopefully.
And then, whilst up there, use my other hand to smack it with the warhammer to do a little extra damage.
Okay.
So I can get some damage with the dragon glaive, some damage with the warhammer.
Okay, so...
And then jump down again. Like, I'm not going to stay up there.
Okay,
I'm just like, Smack, smack, smack.
Yeah, I gotcha. So I would say that normally you'd have advantage because of the spell that was cast, but because of the action you're doing, because even though Bob is telling you, Julian's telling you where it is, you're still leaping in the air.
I'm not going to give you
disadvantage, but I'm not going to give you any advantage on the attack roll.
Okay.
So make your attack roll first. Jeez. D20.
12.
12 plus your, was it plus 5?
Yeah, plus 5.
That's a hit.
Yes.
It's very hard for her not to hit.
Yeah. So, 1d10 for the dragon glaive first.
Yes, 1d10, roll that up.
Why did I, how did I lose it already? There it is. 8.
8 plus 4 is 12. Yep. So you do 12, oops, you do 12 points of damage. And you're hanging with one hand.
Yes, and now I'm going to smack it with my, that's an action. All right, I'm just going to smack it with my warhammer now.
Okay.
So, all right. Which is 1d8 plus 4.
Yeah, plus 4.
I can never find anything. All right. 9.
9. Okay, now you do 9 points of damage. You smack it, and then you're going to jump off?
Yep, and then I'm just going to, like, jump down to the ground. Fall back down to the ground.
Fall back down to the ground. Just make another dexterity saving throw.
Okay.
Boots are handy.
19.
Yeah, that's safe.
You're fine. So I land, and I go, ta-da!
Yeah, especially with your boots, Elena. You're very, 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 very nicely. All right. I got 10 weeks turn, by the way. So we're going to...
Now, is this thing even looking sorry for itself at this point?
Well, you can't tell it's looking sorry for itself,
Julian. How's he looking?
It's bloody. It's like its head is starting to slump a little bit down off of the tower. Henrique turns to you, Julian, and he says, "Tell me, friend, where is he?"
He is coiled around the clock tower. His head is about level with the clock face itself, but is beginning to drift below it. You can see our poor friend Henley still clinging to the bottom half of the creature.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
we're
working. We're getting you down.
Henrique walks. He starts to walk slowly directly towards the clock tower. And he puts away his flaming sword, and you see on his hand he has a ring that's starting to glow blue, and he puts his hand up with the glowing blue ring, and he says, "Stop," to the beast, "show yourself," and the beast has to make a wisdom saving throw. 4. He fails.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get to see this bugger.
The beast suddenly he goes from being invisible to being fully seen, and you see this giant serpent.
Ah, hide it again, Henrique.
Something around.
I'm looking at your eyes.
Around the paper. The clock tower. He has thick bluish scales and rows of giant teeth. He looks at Henrique and he says, "What black magic is this? You will die for your insolence." And he tries to attack Henrique. And in doing so, he is unable to hit him, and he takes... Is this the D10? Yes. He takes 5 D10, 16... Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
23. 27 points of damage. And curls back... And looks destroyed and completely beaten. And Henrique says, "You are mine now, creature. You will listen to me, and you will let these people alone and let them pass. That alarm. Take no heed of that alarm. You will let these people pass. You will give them what is needed to complete their journey. And we will walk out of here alive." And the creature slinks back and seems to disengage from you. And he says, "One day, I will break this charm, and I will kill you. But for now, you all may pass."
Ah.
Henrique, that
good
was
job,
marvelous.
Henrique.
I did it.
Oh, yeah.
Suddenly the barrier that was behind the clock tower dissipates, and you can see a path leading away.
All right. All right. We're off to see the wizard, folks. Let's go.
It's happening.
So, you guys walk back out the tower, and but you can see behind you the snake is like staring at you, and you can tell he wants to strike and kill you and kill you all. Yes. And Henrik looks at him for a few more moments, and then continues to walk with you towards the exit. As you come to the exit, you see another one of those boxes where you found your bags and your satchels, in there, right by the gate. So. If you guys want to open that up.
All right. I'll open up mine.
Okay. So when you open up this kind of giant box near the gate, a couple of things you see. One is another one of those orbs that you found to open up the gate to Blackthorn is there.
Uh-huh.
So that's your first key that you found. So, and then there are again three boxes, each with the sigils that you found in the ogre container. Inside yours, Henley, is a sword, a one-handed sword. It's called the Dancing Sword of Freya. You can use a bonus action to toss this magic sword into the air and speak the command word. When you do so, the sword begins to hover and flies up to 30 feet and attacks one creature of your choice within 5 feet of it. The sword uses your attack roll and ability score modifier to damage rolls.
Nice. Right.
While the sword hovers, you can use a bonus action to cause it to fly up to 30 feet to another spot within 30 feet of you. As part of the same bonus action, you can cause the sword to attack one creature within 5 feet of that one as well. After the hovering sword attacks for the fourth time, it flies up to 30 feet and tries to return to your hand. If you have no hand free, it falls to the ground at your feet. The sword has no unobstructed path to you. It moves as close to you as possible and then falls to the ground. So there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Lovely. Me. Me next.
Thrace, you find a headband in the case.
Does it have a flower on?
Sure, it has a flower on. And when you put this on, your intelligence score raises to 19.
Oh, hell yeah. That is better, because I am as dumb as shit normally, so that's great.
And for you, Julian, you find a set of incredibly light, almost like regular traveling robes, scale mail. And this is Jormundur scale armor. It gives you resistance to radiant damage. And it also gives you +3 to your AC.
Wow.
So after you take these items, the four of you walk up, and you're now at the gate to the castle.
We got our fifth glowy guy, right?
You got no light for this
we
one.
Got no, we got no
light. Look at all the stuff you got.
Though we killed the snake.
I know, but you go.
Oh, we didn't kill the snake.
You didn't kill the snake.
Right.
Yeah.
The snake's still
why.
Alive. Yeah. You get to this giant gate, and through it you can see the castle up on this hill of the mountain, and there are three spots for orbs, basically where the lock would be on the gate.
So we have two, right?
Well, no, you only have one.
I have one.
The one is the
one.
One. Yeah.
Oh, all right. So we put the orb in.
Yeah. You place the orb in the gate, and it unlocks one giant bar. It also. Next to you, on the path, looked like you were kind of in a solid area. There's like it was surrounded by solid walls. A outline of a door appears and then disappears, and you can see a path leading into the Blackthorn Forest.
Uh-oh. I guess I know where we're going next.
Mm-hmm. My friends, I'm afraid the challenge is not over, but I will be at your side through everything. We'll be right back.